Hey, this is Chris from oneofus.net, and I am here covering Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin 2014. I'm talking to predominant geek comedian Mike Lawrence, and I can say that because your album cover is actually a picture of you as a crying Wolverine. So
oh, yes.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, we Frank Miller Wolverine number one'd it, which is awesome. And it was funny. The original art was done by this comic, Mateo Lane, who's really funny and really talented. We had it look as identical to Wolverine 1 as possible, and they made us make some changes, but it ended up working out for the best. And that was, the thing is my favorite, superhero, and I originally wanted the title to be This Man, This Monster.
That's the next album.
Yeah, I mean, that is like the best issues of all time. But we went with I just thought of Sadamantium, and I'm like, that is like too funny. And then I thought, well, I'm not the biggest Wolverine fan. How could I make this work? And I was like, boom. Wolverine crying.
You do. You talk about comics a lot on your album, or at least you talk about Batman a lot, which, you know, let's face it, is one of the top three superheroes ever.
Yeah, Batman is comics.
Yeah. and you talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah,
And what have you. So even though you don't talk about Wolverine, I think that it's still okay. We'll let it go.
I just came up with a new character yesterday that I don't really have a context for, but I might just start using as, like, here's a character, guys. Optimus Prime's older brother, Pessimus Prime.
That works with your theme.
Yeah.
I like that. There's a whole routine that writes itself there, I think. But you have to be able to do an impression of that guy.
The one thing I like about breast cancer is that it has the word breast in it. Yeah, just stuff like that. Just Pessimus Prime's is really.
You could write that whole routine like the 5 minutes after I leave, I suspect. That's such a good idea.
Shia LaBeouf came on set and created Transformers. Put the cube in my chest.
You know, that's the thing. Transformers 4 coming out, I think everyone, to some degree, was like, oh, thank God, no more Shia LaBeouf. But then they caught themselves and go, wait, why do I give a shit either way?
Yeah, of all the things that, you know, I'll say this, I saw the first Transformers in 2007 when it came out on 4th of July day, and I was working at a hot dog place in the Lower East Side, Manhattan, and my coworker was a guy from Sri Lanka, and he had never seen a movie in a movie theater. He just got into the country recently and all that. And so I decided to take him, and it was the most beautiful thing that I've ever, you know, it was the best 4th of July I've ever had, because I got to see, like we make fun of these movies and we're so cynical, because we just get so many of them, and the way that this guy watched the movie, like, it genuinely, like, made me cry and be happy, and I'm like, this is why we make art, you know, even though it's a Michael Bay movie.
Right.
Like, he was laughing when he was supposed to laugh and cheering and screaming, and it was incredible. There's a scene where Optimus Prime is, like, talking to Shia LaBeouf's character, and the mom goes, what are you doing up there? Masturbating? And he was just, he lost it. And then you're like, oh, that's why these movies, they're not for us, you know? When we get, like, so many great ones, you know, we get so jaded and bitter, but, like, that's when we wonder why these things, like, crush overseas.
Right. Well, I often have to have that discussion with some people who are younger on our site, because we do movie reviews of most of the theatrical stuff that comes out, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, younger folks will be a lot more forgiving, because, quite frankly, they just haven't seen as much to be, and we're like, look, kind of our premise is that we're guys who've already seen everything, and yeah, we are a little jaded, so we're talking to an audience that also obsessively watches everything.
Well, it was like, you know, it's that idea that people... Well, it's funny because you have to be so careful because, like, if you get into more niche stuff, and we're at a point in culture where everything is becoming niche because there's no more like must-see anything.
Niche is starting to outsell mainstream.
Yeah, oddly. It's so divided. And it's like, and you have to read like I saw The Raid 2, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
So incredible.
Orgy of violence.
Oh my, it's beautiful. And I, but then you try to tell people, and they're like, oh, action movie with subtitles? And you're that guy? And you're like, oh, I guess, you know, the Transformers serves a purpose because you'll actually see it.
You know, as much as we like talk shit about some of the worst stuff that's come out in the last couple of years, if you were to go back in time to that audience who was freaked out by watching the locomotive come at the screen and show them Green Lantern or the Spirit, they'd think that this, like, God had come down from heaven and made this movie.
No, they still realize those are shitty.
Even those?
Yeah. They're like, why is Green Lantern beating up Teamsters who lost their jobs because of him?
Well, you're on tour right now, and are you basically doing this Adamantium tour, or are you workshopping new material?
I do a mix of both, you know. My jokes are so short, so it's like, I wish I had quicker turnaround, and I know that the kind of people that like my stuff are the ones who are most, like, aware of that. I mean, I literally had a guy yesterday come up to me. He was like, oh, that was great. I think I've seen some of it before, though. You know? I mean, I've been heckled that. Oh, I saw that joke once, you know?
Well, you know, it's...
And I was like, from who? From you. Oh, I stole from myself?
That's interesting. It's like, what did you think was going to happen? I saw the show last night. Why are you doing the same jokes?
Yeah. And it's that thing, like, you know, you want to do your best. Like, I have new stuff all the time, and I put in new stuff, and I try to write some stuff about every city that I'm at. I've been working on this thing while I'm in Austin about the classic game section at the Pinballs Arcade and how it looks like that convention in The Wrestler. Like, Galaga just has a catheter bag.
Right.
Centipedes on crutches.
I'm embarrassed to admit that's my favorite section of that
I'm sure.
I'm always in there playing like Black Knight, that sort of thing.
And even those are two tokens, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no one token games anymore. Yeah.
Well, that place when it started, some of them were, but then it got incredibly popular super fast. And suddenly they're like, wow, we can charge more.
This economy.
Yeah. Yep. What are you going to do? And those games are not cheap to maintain, so.
No, I understand it, yeah. And it is that niche thing of like, where else are you going to go, huh?
That's true. There is literally nowhere else you can go.
You want to play, Fatty? You want
to
play?
You got to go to Vegas for the museum there, I think, is the next closest place with that big a collection, so.
Yeah, New York has, like, this place, Barcade, and other places like that. And it's so sad because, you know, the whole thing is that you drink while you play. So people just beat the shit out of those machines.
Yeah,
I've seen Punch Out get punched out.
There have been a few times I've been drunk enough playing a game I'm really good at and start getting mad because, like, I know I'm good at this game. Oh, wait, yeah, I've had like 9 beers. Maybe.
Yeah.
That might play into my reflex skills.
Yeah.
I've actually lost some girlfriends over being unaware about the fact that I just couldn't get the strokes right, if you will.
Julian Casablancas has said the same thing.
I know, right? But he meant something different.
Yeah.
Now, I listening to your album, it's this mix of more general accessible jokes and then more niche jokes. And I know, knowing about you, I read your AMA online, and you're very knowledgeable about comic books and geek properties. That's obviously kind of your passion for stuff.
Yeah.
Are you tempted ever to just say, fuck it, and just do a whole album that's super niche-y?
You know, not really, because here's the way that I look at it. I know, like, there's convention comics. Like, there's these guys on that weird circuit where that's all they do, and I don't want to. And I feel like that's the stuff that, I'm passionate about, but I'm, you know, as much as I haven't gotten over how awful the Super Mario Brothers movie was in 93. I haven't gone over how awful my parents' divorce was in 87. So I think it's, you know, and I feel like I want to connect to as many people as possible. Like, I don't want to Family Guy it. You know how, like, I noticed this, like, Family Guy is two different shows. The show that it was before it first got canceled and the show that it was when it came back. And when it came back, it got so lazy. You know, with the Conway Twitty stuff that goes like 4 minutes and the 8 minute chicken fights and, you know, like they took, and some of that was there before, but they took it to this extreme because they knew, well, we have this fan base. They're going to buy these DVDs. They're going to watch this show. We're not going to get canceled again. They realize how valuable we are. So we can do anything we want. And there's a freedom to that, but there's also a laziness to it. Mm. You know, and I think that it's important to, connect to people. I mean, I'm not at a point yet where I'm selling out places and it's nothing but Mike Lawrence fans. So I still have to get everybody, you know, I still do shows at 1 a.m. on a Friday in front of drunken European tourists. And if I go up and talk about the differences between Mappy and Q-Bert, I'm dead, you know?
But if you were like, you know, Seinfeld big and you were like, you know what, I'm going to do my Metal Machine music. I don't give a fuck.
I would do some of that, you know, but I would also, you know, I still care about other things.
Of course, yeah.
Like, you know, and I find other things interesting. I mean, and that's kind of like, I think, you know, like being a nerd, you know, it is like so oversaturated right now that can't be your only angle. You have to do other things.
Oh, yeah. No, and you're right. It is totally oversaturated. You have to be able to show I'm not just interested in who's drawing the Hulk right now.
And I feel like I have, you know, the underlying thesis statement of my whole life and especially, you know, my act, which is my life, is that here's a guy who can't let go. Like, that's what I always say. Because, you know, working at McDonald's for 7.5 years, that's that same mentality that I had punching in every day to a job that was killing me, like literally just destroying me. It's the same mentality I have knowing that I'm going to go see the new Superman, even though it's going to hurt me.
Yeah. There's lots of, pain to mine, and good comedy comes from lots of pain.
Yeah. I mean, my spider sense is tingling so much about Amazing Spider-Man 2.
The early reviews have been very,
I'll be there.
Oh yeah. I'm going to see advanced screening on Monday. So, yeah. You know, it doesn't matter if they made a movie about the Sentry. I'd still be excited to go see the movie, even being reasonably sure.
Look, they're on Jenkins Boulevard, like Paul Jenkins. They always do that. And they're like, Well, that's like all the X-Men movies. They do that thing that I always call it Mortal Kombat Annihilation Syndrome, where they'll put in a character but give them no lines and just have them do their one little like ability or trick, and like. But it's like, no, they're not in the movie. Like, to me, Colossus has never been in an X-Men movie.
Agreed. Biggest disappointment of the X-Men films, I agree with you on that in some ways, is that you introduce one of the best characters, and then he's just like...
Go over there.
He's about as big as one of those characters that lasted for like 3 months right before House of M. You know?
Yeah, and I feel like he looks exactly the same, that same actor, Daniel Cudmore. He looks the same that he did in X... He's just like a bland-looking... You know.
Yeah. I have a feeling when we see Colossus again, it'll be, you know, reinvented for, like, we're actually going to make a character out of him. And look when they actually...
Definitely ain't going to be in Days of Future Past.
Look when they put the effort in, what a good job they do. Like, Nightcrawler was excellent, I thought.
I think, you know what, though? The more I realize, I think the more of an anomaly he was.
Yeah.
Because no one else was as developed or likable or cool as he was.
Well, they spent a lot of energy on developing him. As much as I thought, like, in some ways they were doing that with the Beast.
Now, was it just that Cumming decided never to come back?
Yeah.
Why was he not ever...
I have no idea. I never read a real answer.
He doesn't seem like that big of a guy.
No, but I think he's theater, mainly.
Yeah, but he does movies and stuff. He's been in shit.
He does. I think that with these movies, they want you to lock down to a contract. And I think what it came down to is like, I'm just not interested in doing that.
They should have done whatever it took. Yeah. I mean, fucking Christ.
He was so great in that role.
Yeah. He's better than those movies.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, and like Magneto's all right. Like he has fun moments. I love how gay McKellen infuses him with, "Oh, Rogue, I love what you did with your hair." I saw Waiting for Godot with Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, and
that had to be a rare pleasure.
Yeah, it was great. A woman was texting next to me the entire time. You know, because those guys are going to live long enough to come back to Broadway again. it was so awful. But McKellen, yeah, was one of the best live performers I've ever seen. Stewart was good, too, but McKellen was, like, on another level.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Stewart is an excellent actor, but, like, compared to Ian McKellen, who is just a right up there sir, with, you know, Gielgud or somebody, I think.
He's oh, my God.
Got that sort of skill.
Yeah.
You know. Well, you know what? Let's take us way back to the town of your birth, Davies, Florida. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're not happy about that?
Don't pluralize it, Davy, Florida. Oh, Davy? Maybe think there's more than one.
I'm sorry. I was laughing when I was reading about this online today because apparently last year they discovered the body of a 2,000-year-old woman, and I was like, where's Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks when you need them? I was like,
well, I'd have a nosh on her.
I was like, hey, there's some material for you right there. Yeah. But you came from comedy, a line of you're a legacy in the Pratt House or Prattfall House, I guess.
Yeah.
Your mom was a stand-up comedian, Alice, I believe was her name.
Yeah.
Like I, you're like, was it?
Yeah. No.
What kind of what was she doing? You know, I mean, like, where did she get? How did she get into that? Because she's from an era where it wasn't as common for there to become female stand-ups.
Yeah, but it was the boom, though. So yeah. It was a much bigger thing, and there was a lot more money and cocaine. And
that's true.
No, but I think that, yeah, it was this huge thing. Like, I guess, and I saw her a few times growing up and all of that. Doing stand-up. No, I grew up joint custody. So 1 week I was at my mom's, and 1 week I was at my dad's, and I think, you know, she performed more often on the weeks that we weren't there. Yeah, she was, like, super fun, like, energetic. Like, you know, she hosted a lot. And but she was, you know, she was good. And, you know, the boom happened and the boom busted and, you know.
Did she retire post, like, when she said, look, the money's just, they tore down the brick wall?
It was different things. I mean, she's a really great, cook and all that. And she teaches classes now. You know, she's done some amazing stuff. Yeah, she has a website, chefalicecooking.com. And she's awesome. But she, I think it was just that thing of, I mean, and I feel that way too. Like, there's only so many years that you can really actively, like, thrust yourself into it. And, like, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and he was, like, wondering whether or not to reject something because the money was going to be really good, but the gig was going to be terrible. And I was like, you know, we are, in the most minimal sense, athletes.
Yeah,
you know, you do have a certain number of prime years, and, you know.
And very few people are lucky to be able to push past that.
Yeah, because I feel like there are some rare exceptions. You know, there are guys like Pepitone who, like, find it later and that kind of thing. But for the most part, even the older comics, you know, they operate on this different, like, legend status. Like, when you go to see a Cosby or you know... Like, he's kind of, even though he just did that Comedy Central special, he's kind of, like, in many ways out of active competition. He is his own business, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it seems like there's a lot of moving towards, rather than comics being discovered in their, you know, early 20s, now it seems like they're being discovered in their mid-30s. People like Patton Oswalt, who was, like, working forever until suddenly the internet said, hey, have you checked this guy out? He's fucking amazing.
Yeah. No, there's definitely that. I mean, there's definitely, yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, CK and Burr and yeah. All those guys, like, and that's been one of the great things about the internet, where it's like, oh, some of the top comics are the best comics.
And even Marin got a second shot.
Oh, my God, yeah. You know? Through technology.
Yeah. It seems like that maybe the field is changing, but even so, they have that point. Well, if you haven't made it, if you get that late start and you don't make it in, you know, if you don't hit the next level in 5 years, then people are going to forget about you and move on to the next guy.
Yeah, it is very much that way. I mean, and that's kind of the thing with the nerd thing too, is that there are a lot of people that do nerd comedy that it's like, if that's all I'm hinging on, I'm screwed.
Right.
You know, get in line, nerd boy.
You got to open it wider to a bigger audience. Sure. Although I admit, you know, as someone who likes all that stuff myself, when you get ultra specific, I think is some of my favorite moments. Like, were you talking about how the Batman villains are actually just a bunch of homeless people? I can't believe that no one has ever said that before. I was like, oh my God, it's so obvious. It's been right in front of us this whole time.
One of the greatest interpretations of the Batman villains, one of the best descriptions that I've ever heard was Paul Dini, of course, you know.
One of the greatest Batman controllers
ever. Oh, my God, yeah. But he is talking about how he sees them as, like, the Kim Kardashians of Gotham City. Like, they would just be in TMZ all the time.
Right.
And everything, that they're celebrities.
Like, you know, that's true. You know, you never get that part where there's paparazzi following Bruce Wayne and his girlfriends around. You'd think it would become really hard to be Batman after a certain point, you know, in today's world. Like, when does he find a place to change into being Batman?
Yeah, and that idea that, like, that no one ever writes that this guy, like, lives in a mansion way off by himself, even though, you know, like, it's so weird.
Yeah, it never occurs to the press to go, you know, that is odd. And now that I think about it, with all those marvelous toys that he has, you'd have to be pretty, pretty rich to get that. So hold on, hold the phone.
Yeah. Or just that, like, anytime you've ever seen someone in a costume, you can immediately, just by the look of their eyes or whatever, tell if you know that person, you know who it is. And even the voice, like, his mouth isn't covered, you know?
Yeah. And with computer imaging technology and recognition stuff, just the lower half of your face with a good enough system analyzing it with a list of suspects would be enough to figure
it
out.
While using the same voice you've heard from that person. That he's this public figure.
Yeah.
He's Bruce Wayne. He's in the media all the time. No one ever has heard him talk.
You're right. Batman is stupid.
Yeah.
You know, you also brought up a point that I'm one of the people who always has to go, seriously, nobody else feels this way? As much as I like the Nolan Batman films, the voice is a pain in the ass to me. I can't stand the choice they did for him to just growl his way through.
Why is that? I think that was coming from, like, the method actor in Bale, of, like, that these have to be two distinct personalities and, you know, and extremes of each other. And, yeah, even... But the dumber his Batman was, the better his Bruce Wayne was. Like, he's clearly the best Bruce Wayne ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, on film, yes. Well, come on, Adam West. But you know, in its own way, show. I love Adam West's Batman so much because of that wonderful camp value and growing up with it and just thinking it was so incredible.
Yeah, but you know, here's the funny thing about the Adam West Batman. Whether it was, you know, like 90 or whatever episodes it was, or whether it was that one movie, that's it. Like, it never changes. It never improves upon itself. Like, I feel like you can just watch the Batman 66 movie and just, like, I've seen this, you know, it's got all the hits and the beats, you know, and that's all you really need.
You know, I think one of the saddest things about Batman, the movies, is that Clooney, I think if he had given another 7 or 8 years, actually would have been an excellent Batman. But he was still in the middle of that whole bobblehead acting thing used to do. And he said everything with this sort
the
of
the dude,
like,
from ER. And yeah. Yeah. I mean, of all the reasons that specific movie is terrible, he's not one of them. You know, he's fine. I thought Kilmer was fine. I mean, it's just those movies do not age at all, though. I mean, it's so funny that, like, once you're in this era that we're in now, where it's its own genre, you know, the superhero movie is its own thing and its own formula. You know, back then it really was like the West, like Wild West, like they just didn't know what they were doing and were throwing anything at the wall. I mean, like, this is how you know, like, executives must be like these old, sad people when they're like, What about the Phantom and the Shadow? Like, that's literally...
That's true. I didn't thought about it that way. That yeah. Those movies got made before the Avengers or Spider-Man.
Yeah, because that's what I liked when I was a kid. The Phantom, you know?
I kind of grew up reading. I'm not as old as this sounds, but I did actually grow up reading some of that old stuff, too.
Yeah.
And listening to the radio show. Like, I loved Inner Sanctum and The Shadow and all that stuff. So I was happy as hell to go see those movies in the theater. And I still think they're fun in their way. They're about the same way as the Rocket, what's his face, the Rocketeer.
Yeah.
Where it's like...
Rocketeer's a much better made movie.
These are far from perfect films. They're very flawed.
Yeah.
But there's more than enough here to enjoy yourself if you're willing to be forgiving.
Yeah, but Rocketeer is of a higher quality.
I agree with that too. But I still think it's one of those, like, I wouldn't put Rocketeer on the same level as, you know, the recent Marvel Universe stuff.
Yeah, some of them, yeah. Yeah, I like... You know, it's interesting. I really liked, Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
But I do feel like the formula is starting to show. Like, the humor is starting to get a little lazy. But it's still, I mean, that's the thing. Anytime I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man, some of these Marvel movies, and then, like, DC announces anything, you're like, oh, okay, like, I should just be thankful.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
The way of Blues Traveler, no matter what the waitress brings, I shall drink it and always be full.
I was actually starting to get Marvel fatigue a bit from the last few. I mean, actually, I'm the guy. I thought Iron Man 3 was great. I liked it a lot, especially especially after Iron Man 2, which was not great.
That twist was the worst.
But Thor 2, I thought was just dull and predictable.
That Mandarin twist, fuck them.
See,
fuck them and give me my money back.
I like that because I was like, I don't really give that big of a shit of the Mandarin, and I have read a lot of Iron Man.
But here's the problem. The fundamental problem with it is that when, and this is the pro wrestling fan in me, it's him versus the Mandarin in that movie is built like a pro wrestling match.
Yeah.
When he's like, I'm going to kick your ass. And the videos, you know, are your cities will fall and all of that. It was so well done. It was great. And then here's the problem. If you're going to do a bait and switch, then what? Your switching has to be of equal or greater value.
Mm.
Getting Gandhi, you know, getting Ben King, one of the best act. I mean, his performance in Sexy Beast is one of the best amazing. Villain performances ever.
Yeah, I was just talking about that because we just watched Under the Skin by the same director.
Oh, nice. Yeah. But getting that guy. Okay, you're gonna tell me that he's not the actual villain. All right. Okay, so who's the actual villain? And he better be as good. Fire-breathing Guy Pearce. Go fuck yourself.
See, for me it worked because I felt like his character and where he was coming from was more intrinsic to the one of the most interesting Iron Man storylines, Extremis, than anything that had to do with the Mandarin. So I was like, wow, as a fan of the comics, I was going, this is the direction I was more hoping this was going.
But his in-movie motivation... was terrible. It was literally, you were supposed to meet me on New Year's Eve, Tony, and you didn't.
You're that right was there. It. No, you're right there. That
so, I mean, okay. He was bland. He was boring. Like, and that was the thing. Everything that Kingsley had done, you know, before the reveal was fascinating and interesting. And you're like, this is a motherfucker. You know, he shoots the guy. And you're like, I have to see this guy get taken down.
Right.
You know, it was literally pro wrestling booking 101. And then you're like, all right, so we didn't give you what we advertised, but here's this instead. And it was terrible.
It'd be interesting to note if there is a correlation between people who really like wrestling who didn't like Iron Man 3 and people who just never watch wrestling. Because there was two things on Sunday. There was wrestling or there was old martial arts films. And I was the old martial arts films guy. Never got into wrestling because I was too busy watching, you know, Nine Diagram Pole Fighter.
Yeah.
which is equally as silly, but...
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But, you know, like I was saying before, I am getting a little bit of that fatigue. But then Captain America, the new Captain America, I thought kind of made... It was refreshing. It was a taste of Marvel spring water.
I wish Scarlett could act, but, you know...
See, I disagree with you there, too, because I think she's great.
Especially after... She makes these pouty faces like she just pooped her pants every time she does... The same Hurricanrana over and over again.
I totally clean those diapers.
With my mouth.
With my mouth.
But just, she's not, I never get that I'm watching a girl who didn't have a childhood and was forced into being a Russian spy.
Well, I mean,
she doesn't carry that pain.
I don't think we're supposed to see that side of her yet.
Yeah,
even
we are.
Even in the comics, I don't feel like we ever see that until it's a real.
There's some of that though, and she doesn't have any pain or pathos, and the fact that she doesn't even like, her name is Natasha. She's created in the 60s. Why can't she have a Russian accent?
I do agree with you on that.
She's lazy. She's a bad actress.
Just seeing her in Under the Skin with where she does a British accent the whole time, I saw it with a British guy who was like, that's one of the best British accents I've ever seen an American actor do.
I mean, she was great in Her.
Yeah.
But it's also because she does these faces that undermine what she's going for.
It might have been a decision on the part of someone on the executive level at Marvel Studios saying, there's not the warmest amount of feeling towards the Russians right now.
Nah.
You know, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, there's always, as much as I feel like Kevin Feige, is it Feige?
I think so.
I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. He keeps at bay a lot of the stupid note writing by people who don't really know what they're doing. Some of that is still going to creep in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think the two films I'm most excited about aren't coming aren't coming till arguably phase three. Like Ant-Man, obviously, because Edgar Wright. Let's face it.
Yeah.
That's got to be cool.
I mean, Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd and Edgar Wright together.
And Michael Douglas as Pym. Like, hello.
Yeah. And I'm a huge fan of Black Panther. I think he's one of the best black superheroes ever. Because he's a black guy, he's not any hero.
Say superhero, though?
What now?
Why did you have to say he's one of the best black heroes?
Well, because I wanted to correct that, because that sounds like I'm comparing him to Martin Luther King or somebody like that.
No, but I'm saying, why did you have to say he was black to begin with? Didn't you just say he's one of the best superheroes?
Well, I think black superheroes specifically, because here's a guy who is not from the streets or struggled with crime.
He's from a made-up African town where they still have spears and the best technology in the world.
Well, he's super rich. He's super rich, and he's a king, and he's
It's uncomfortable. And like the Wakanda stuff, some of it is like, it's pretty uncomfortable that Kirby drew those
things. With the way he had where they had mixing the cultural stuff.
The headdresses and rich. Shit. Yeah.
It's like, why don't you guys just move in with the Inhumans? You know you want to. But I really like Black Panther as a character, and I hope that they get somebody like Chiwetel Ejiofor or Idris Elba or somebody like that to step into those shoes, because it deserves an actor who can actually bring something to it.
Is he Marvel or is
he's Marvel? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because I thought
he was an Avenger at one point.
Yeah, but he was also premiered in Fantastic Four.
Yeah, he did, and it wasn't that long after that they switched him over to the Avengers because he was like God.
I think
in the second Essential volume, he's an Avengers. It's like wow, not that far.
Oh, he's in pretty quick. Yeah,
but then the other one is Doctor Strange, and I know like my favorite moment of the new Captain America movie was just when they mentioned him passing Doctor
Strange. They mentioned him in Spider-Man 2, though.
Oh, do they mention him in Spider-Man 2?
In the 2004, you know, when they're talking about Doctor Octopus,
they're fighting to see who's
going to get this guy, Doctor Strange.
Yeah. I'm super excited about that, and it sounds pretty certain there's going to be a Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah, that's one of those, you know, it's all about the performance, you know. I mean, and Marvel's doing good. And Marvel's casting versus DC's casting, it's like, they're not just picking, you know, like, it's not just stunt casting or, you know, it doesn't feel focus grouped. It's like, who would be the most interesting, you know? What would make a good movie, and then let's also have it be about Ant-Man?
Yeah.
You know? And they're very much like Bradley Cooper voicing Rocket Raccoon. Like, that's just fascinating. Like, that's okay. Yeah.
Sure. Even though I was rooting for H. John Benjamin myself.
Man.
Big Archer fan, so I was like, oh.
Even like Chris Pratt, like, that's a ballsy move.
I mean, just getting James Gunn to direct the film is a ballsy move.
Yeah. But they're smart, you know? I will say this. This is a problem that Marvel movies often have, and it was especially prevalent in Iron Man 3 to me, is that it does feel like they give the directors, you know, this creative control, or like, all right, Shane Black, make it Christmas. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, do the things you want. It never felt like a Christmas movie, though, so that was a flaw. But like,
yeah, when they tried to fit it in, it was a little bit like
yeah.
just a reminder that Shane Black was directing it more than a
Christmas movie. Yeah, don't do Christmas in California, you dumbass.
Unless it's Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is like, so it's like in that movie, and in a lot of these, it feels like, so they give them this creative freedom. and they get to put their personal flourishes on it. It lets you know, like, this director made this. And I like that. But then what happens, I feel this, it also feels like they give them mandatory bullet points that they have to make sure are in there. And I feel that's where the problems and the flaws come in, because what happens is, like with Shane Black and, like, the whole thing of, you know, he takes the reactor out at the end and, you know, he's like, I don't need this. And, you know, like, that's a big plot point. But he rushes it and doesn't give a shit about it.
Yeah.
He's like, I know I have to do that for you guys to get to the next movie. But, like, there's no... I feel like that's definitely, like, the whole... Like, it didn't even feel like a big thing that S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, fell apart in Winter Soldier. It just felt like something they were told had to happen.
And so they could line it up with the TV show?
Yeah, but it was the thing they cared the least about.
Yeah.
And God, that TV show. I haven't seen it since the first few episodes.
I almost dropped out too, but it's not great, but it got bad.
Yeah, I can't. But it should be great. Why isn't it great? I mean, we know why it's bad, but why isn't it great?
It's bad because Jeff Loeb is in charge of it. Yeah. and John's like, oh, just take my brother Jed. He's just as good as me.
Well, anything too, like, and I know comic books, everyone comes back, but like, don't you feel like Coulson is a character that should have died because it made sense, and that there has to be some gravity in these movies of dead means dead? You know, because like every villain that has died in these movies is never brought up again.
Yeah.
It's just completely forgotten. No one, I don't think Obadiah Stane was ever mentioned.
True. I don't think so either. And now that I can remember, whereas the heroes die, can't even stay dead for an entire movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even like in Nick Fury, it made sense. I mean, I was pissed that he wasn't a life model decoy, but
yeah.
But like, with Nick Fury coming back, I was like, yeah, all right, this is cool. But like, you did this with Coulson and you did it. It's like, we're 9 movies in. Like, someone should have died by now.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to happen in Avengers 2. Just to show, like, look, we're not fucking around.
Well, especially with Whedon in charge of the whole thing, who loves to permanently kill off characters. That's one of his things.
Yeah.
Just catch you at your happiest moment and then take one of your favorite characters and slash their
throat. And that's the thing a confident guy can do. The same way, like, a comic can, you know, get rid of bits and just do new ones. You're like, look, man, I'm going to have new shit. You know, trust me. You know, I don't need to rely on that stuff. Like, that's, you know, but people who aren't confident, like, oh, we need this back. We need, you know.
I suspect to some degree it's Marvel being overprotective of their brands.
Yeah.
You know, saying, yeah, we know that that's what you do, but we can't really let you, like, kill off that character.
Yeah, like, just that, like, not even like a Maria Hill. You know,
I mean, they arguably have killed Jasper Sitwell, but then again, they never made him really Jasper. He was Jasper Sitwell in name only. You know,
in the same way that, they kept saying Rumlow, and he's credited as Crossbones, but that wasn't Crossbones.
No.
Just a guy.
Yeah, exactly. I guess we'll have to see what happens. I mean, clearly they're going the Ed Brubaker storyline route, and I fully expect Captain America 3 to be the death of Captain America, but, you know, we'll see. A lot of things can change between now and 2016, so.
No mustache on Batroc? Like,
happy there was no mustache. Why? On Batroc. Because it was a little silly in this
day. But comic books are silly.
Well, no. But
so why not do that?
Especially with the whole, like, you know, that type of mustache being labeled the hipster mustache and things. And I was like, you're just going to get a lot of flack from that silly flack, but a lot of unnecessary flack. And you want to start, Captain America more as a spy movie? And I was like, I kind of like that they're sticking up to a certain
point. But you're taking out some of the fun.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what these movies are for. And if they just feel like Bourne movies, if they just feel like every action movie I saw, then what's the point? I want Natasha to fucking, I'm sorry, Captain, you know?
Like, I did want that.
Yeah, and Zoot the Lure. I wanted Batroc to, you know, the French accent and the, and it's just he's just a guy named Batroc.
I don't know why they didn't make him more specific, more French. You know, it's like, I mean, I don't think he necessarily had to have
Albanian,
the purple and gold outfit, but to be really French would have been awesome and make him like
give him the purple and gold outfit.
At least hire.
You're not you would be lying if you didn't tell me that one of the best parts of that movie was Artem Zola in the thickest German accent.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was campy.
Yeah, but that was that point in the movie where they were like, they remind you that it's not just a spy movie. This is part of that Marvel universe, and it ties back to the first one, and that's what...
But don't make it so serious and bland.
Yeah. You might be right. I don't know. For me, I liked the way it transferred that, but I will say... Of all the, you know, they got some, I don't even know who the guy was who was playing Batroc, but why
he's George St. Pierre, he's a UFC fighter.
Okay, but I was like, why don't you get that parkour guy who was in, like, District B-13 or something?
David Bell.
Whose, like, whole thing is fucking climbing up walls and jumping off shit, you know?
I mean, he is a professional fighter, though, George St. Pierre.
Yeah. I just, like, his whole deal isn't climbing up walls and doing flips and stuff. I'm like, that's who Batroc is. Seemed like kind of a no-brainer to me to do that, but okay.
I just feel like there's I don't want that vanilla feel to these things. I want some of that Stan Lee boisterous. Look at this, it's great, you know.
If you could see any storyline make it to the movies from comics, what would it be? And superhero comics, mind you.
That's really tough, but there's so many. But one of the ones that would be amazing would be Under Siege.
From what is that from?
That's from Avengers. That's like I would say 272 to 277 or somewhere around there. It's Roger Stern, John Buscema. It's the Masters of Evil led by Zemo's son. I think there's Heinrich and Helmet. I want to say Helmet is the son, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will tweet me. But he gets together. His whole thing is just, I'm going to have as many villains as possible. And he gets together like 18 or 19 of them. And they just raid Avengers Mansion.
I remember that.
They beat Jarvis to near death. They beat Hercules to near death. And it's incredible. And there's one really touching moment, Mr. Hyde. Like, that's the thing, too. I just want some of these, like, fun, like, an absorbing man. But I want him to be named Crusher Creel, and I want him to have the pants. Like, I want some of that. I know you can't always do that.
Yeah.
And I know that some of that silliness is stupid, but some of it's valid, too.
Like, I feel like maybe the Dark Knight films got too many people thinking, get away from the comic bookiness and make it like
Man of Steel
world.
Just was the worst. Yeah, I mean, fuck that movie.
I agree with you there.
I mean, you know, now, and I was saying that yesterday to someone, like, that's the thing with the DC, where it's like, wait, you're going to try to, you couldn't get Superman. If you can't get Superman right, like, that's literally the first superhero. Yeah. That's your starter kit.
I don't think putting Cyborg into your new movie is going to help you at this point.
You couldn't play Mary Had a Little Lamb. You're going to do Freebird?
Yeah.
You know? you know? And it's like going to Golden Corral. You're like, oh, the burgers here are kind of dry. They're not that tasty. But, ooh, lobster tails, $1.99. you know?
Well, I was going to say you've ruined Golden Corral for me, but no, Golden Corral ruined Golden Corral for me.
And Brett screwed Brett. I feel like some of that silliness. But yeah, in Under Siege, what's really great is, so Mr. Hyde has Batman, Captain America crossover. He has a locker and he destroys all of his personal stuff in front of him. He bends his, like, first shield and all that. And then the worst thing, he rips up the only picture he had of his mom.
Ah, so now it's personal.
Yeah. And the story ends with, like, they beat the bad guys, of course. But then it's like, oh, shit. You know. That and what else, I think, like, if I just had all the money to just, like, make one thing. I would do a Fantastic Four movie and set it in the 60s.
Yes, that's what everybody wanted. And Marvel, or not, I'm sorry, not Marvel, Fox just couldn't give a shit.
I think it's such a thing of its, you know, and they're my, the Thing is my favorite superhero.
He's awesome. That run when he had his own book in the 80s, that was my favorite comic book.
Yeah, Byrne, man. Yeah. Oh,
so good.
Dan Slott brought it back a few years ago. It was only 8 issues, but it was great. Like, yeah. I love that he's the guy that plays poker with everybody. yeah. Marvel 2-in-1, I thought was better than Marvel Team Up. Mm. He's just a fun character. But what was I going to say?
About your
The 60s, yeah. Like, I want, like, do the Galactus saga and just embrace it. Don't cloud it up. Here it is. He's eating the Skrull homeworld. He's a giant fucking dude in a purple helmet with Kirby Crackle, and it's awesome because, you know? And I think, like, because what they're doing now and, like, these kids that they're casting and all that, it's just, you're just calling it Fantastic Four, but it's not. Like, yep. Here's who I think, at least Mr. Fantastic and Ms. Fantastic, Ty Burrell and Julie Bowen from Modern Family.
Oh, wow. That would never have occurred to me, but you are right. That would actually be a terrific choice.
Yeah. they have
Eric
a reason.
Stone Street is the Thing.
And can't,
The Thing can be a little...
And Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
The Thing could be... It'd be awesome if he was still very manly and all that stuff, but he was also gay. Yeah. You know?
It's slobbering time.
Oh, I kind of want to say that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Grimm, but you have AIDS. What a revolted development. Better not tell my Aunt Petunia about this.
Oh, boy. I would say that you might have a whole other routine there, but it's going to have to be carefully developed.
Dude, I wouldn't even mind, I feel like what you could even do is you could have it be like an Incredibles type thing where they were in the 60s and they were these big people, but now, like, they're older and they're trying to regain, you know, their fame or their success or whatever. Like, things shut down for them. And
that would be so much better than what they've been trying to do, which is that basic, let's do the origin story again with a bunch of teenagers because as near as I can tell, they keep handing these actors and directors the Ultimate Universe version of these books instead of the actual original book.
There's no thought or love in any of it, you know? And the thing was, like, Bendis gave a shit when he did Ultimate Spider-Man. No one gave a shit when they did Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ultimate Spider-Man was the best thing that came out of that entire Ultimate.
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
And still the only really, really... You should be
reading. And it holds up, yeah.
I mean, Bendis has two things he pays attention to. Ultimate Spider-Man and Powers. Yeah. And he puts a lot of love into both those books. And everything else is kind of a hit-and-miss type scenario. You know?
Yeah, and he's just like... And I think a lot of the Marvel movies, like, that blandness of the humor sometimes.
Yeah.
Although some of the humor is great. Like, I'll take Bendis, you know, writing quips over Johns any day. Johns does not know how to be funny.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that, although he is good at plotting.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think Blackest Night was one of the only good modern day events there have been.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like that new 52 stuff, like that first opening Justice League arc is just empty.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the thing is, like, I like Cyborg. You know, as you're talking about, like, that he's going to be in the new Superman movie. But it does feel...
It reeks of desperation to have a strong black character in the DC universe, the way they're trying to push him to the forefront of it.
And the thing is, it doesn't feel organic. Like, the thing was, you know, I'm a huge, you know, Bruce Timm, you know, Paul Dini guy. I love all that stuff. I didn't have any problems with Jon Stewart in the Justice League series.
No, it was...
Why would you dislike... He's a token, yeah, but it's like, no, he was great, and...
He's a great character in the comic books.
Yeah, and I thought it worked, and they made you really care about him. The stuff they did with Hawkgirl, all that was awesome. Oh, yeah. I just feel like Cyborg, he doesn't have a personality. Like, they just... You have to make us care. Like, that's the thing, like, in Winter Soldier, I mean, Falcon was better than he's ever been. I really love what they did with Falcon.
Oh, yeah. It's been so long since I even thought about the Falcon. And yeah. Now I'm like, well, I need to go back and reread some of that stuff.
Yeah, he was a social worker from Harlem. Yeah, but, like, what they did with the PTSD stuff and, like,
yeah.
You really cared about him. I thought he was one of, like, the best Marvel movie interpretations that they've done.
Yeah, no, and you're the whole movie, I was a bit on pins and needles with it, because I'm like, I really don't want them to fuck this up, because I want that character to work again for me, and
yeah.
The moment he puts those wings on and soars, you're like, we're good.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, I'm always like, it's going to be silly. Like, I was okay with it not being, like, the classic red and white, and that he didn't have an actual Falcon. Because it worked, like, they explained it, and it fit, and it made sense, and it was still cool, and, I mean, to me, the core of the Falcon is the relationship he has with Cap, and they made that matter the most.
Yeah.
So I was okay with it.
So, who do you think is the most ridiculous comic book character that you don't give a shit you love anyway?
Because
everybody's got that one that they're a little reluctant to admit that they follow and like a lot, but...
I mean... I would say one of my top three Marvel characters, a guy who I have like the biggest heart on for, who I've loved ever since I was the smallest kid and I saw his Marvel card, was Sandman.
Oh yeah, and the original
Flint Marko, yeah. William Baker, yeah. I mean the Neil Gaiman Sandman's great, but like the Spider-Man villain Sandman, to the point where I've watched that, like, and I know Spider-Man 3 is not a good movie, but his scenes make me happy every time. Yeah. When he puts the shirt on, and I'm like, ah, I did the shirt!
I thought his portrayal of that character was actually pretty good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, brought my daughter back, like that, you know, that was, whatever. But
oh, that's the actor.
There's just a visual, cool, like, a dude made of sand.
Yeah.
And then the stepdad that is Hydro Man, but...
I love the run in the comics where he tries to go straight, and oh, Spider-Man that's one tries of my... to help him. I love that run.
Marvel 2-in-1 86, I think it is. It's one of my favorite issues of all time, where he goes into a bar this is his first like reformation thing. He had been bonded with Hydro Man in maybe 212, 213. It's like the giant mud monster, and he comes into the bar, and he's like, I don't. You know, and Ben's about to, you know, things about to fight him. He's like, I don't want to fight you. And they just start talking. And he explains his whole life story. And, you know, they just have a beer. And you're like, these are just dudes. Like, this is the fucking best.
It's funny because those moments were way too rare. And up until just really recently in comics with supervillains, where they really spent the time to humanize them and make them feel like, look, it's just a guy. And now it seems like it's becoming more par for the course. That's what people want to see. I mean,
and I love stuff like the Frightful Four. Like, I love that kind of fun.
Have you been reading the Superior Foes of Spider-Man?
I read some of it, yeah. Oh,
man, I'm really enjoying that book. And it feels a lot like some of the stuff that DC's not doing, but Marvel is, with characters like Hawkeye having a great book. She-Hulk has a great book now. And it's because these people are like, yeah, I'm a superhero, but I also have a regular life with a bunch of day-to-day shit. Dan Slott's She-Hulk
he's one of my favorite writers, but his She-Hulk was incredible. The issue 4 where Spider-Man sues Jonah for libel.
Yep.
So great. He goes, because I'm black. He's like, just kidding.
why did that take so long to happen?
Oh, it's so funny. Probably my favorite miniseries of all time is, I don't know if you've ever read it, Spider-Man Human Torch?
There was a point I read every single Spider-Man I get my hands on, because he was my favorite character forever, until they made him make a deal with the devil, which made absolutely no sense to me.
That was awful, so, yeah.
I'm still kind of on a, like, hands, like, okay, keep you at an arm's distance now, I don't trust you anymore.
But Dan Slott did this, 5-part miniseries, and there's even, they have it in like the digest form where it's like $7 or $8. It's so worth reading. This was before he got the main Spider title. But it's every issue, it's 5 issues, and every issue is a different era in their friendship, and it's a different era in comic books. So the first issue is, you know, the early 60s, you know, Ditko, you know, Kirby, stuff. You know, the second issue is late 60s, the coffee bean and the Ramita stuff. the third issue is my favorite issue, and I nominate this for best single issue of all time, at least me personally. It's such a great idea. I was like, no one's ever thought of this, but this is Spider-Man gets the Spider-Mobile.
Oh, yeah. I owned the little plastic Spider-Mobile when I was a kid.
But, and I never thought of this, but, and he lives in New York and has never driven before. So Johnny has to teach him how to drive.
I remember that. Okay. I have read that.
And this is literally after, right after Gwen Stacy died.
Yeah. And it was a dune buggy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is an odd choice.
And, God, I don't want to spoil it, but they fight the Red Ghost in it. And yeah. The way that they defeat the Red Ghost in his Super Apes is beautiful.
I would strongly urge everyone listening to go back and spend the time and read the original run of Spider-Man, like the original right from the beginning. That's a great book. And it just stays.
It dips a bit when Ditko leaves, though.
It does. But it picks right back up again not too long after that.
But not into the same level. I mean, there's like this fun and energy to what he did. And Romita's a good, great artist. But and I love Spider-Man Blue. I mean, I know Jeff Loeb, but the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale shit, it's great. Most of that stuff's great.
I thought the art is good. I still can't get past Jeff Loeb, usually.
Yeah, but you didn't like any of that stuff?
The only thing I've ever liked from Jeff Loeb was I thought The Long Halloween was pretty good, and Hush is not terrible. It's got things about it I hate.
It serves a purpose.
It serves a purpose, and they did good stuff with it in the comic books afterwards with what came out of it, but I have a problem with the way Loeb does things, and I have a problem with he wants to drama porn the shit out of everything.
Well, building up Riddler, but then doing nothing with it. Like, that's the thing. There has to be repercussions, and there have to be, you know, resolutions. But yeah, other goofy characters. I mean, it's kind of cool, like, in the meme age that, like, MODOK has become so hip.
Yeah.
People love MODOK. Like, they even got in Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Like, blew my mind. Fin Fang Foom. Like,
oh, I've been saying for a while now, I hope Godzilla does really well, because I would want Iron Man to fight Fin Fang Foom in an upcoming movie. Because if you can go, they can go, well, we can do that. We can do Iron Man versus Godzilla, basically.
The Wrecking Crew, those are my guys. I even stopped buying Marvel Legends, but the last one hasn't come out yet, Bulldozer, but I'm waiting so I can have a complete Wrecking Crew, because they're some of my favorite characters.
I thought they were a hip hop band for a while.
I love like the regular, like, those street level villains are my favorites. Just these regular, like, schlubs. Like, that's the only thing about, like, Sandman was just kind of a dick guy.
Yeah.
And then he got sand powers.
Which sounds stupid, but they made it in the comics where, well, how do you stop him?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, he's not the brightest bulb in the world. Yeah. And he's just kind of like, he's very Joe Schmo, but he got these powers that, like, you know, Spider-Man's only hope is to use science to beat this guy. And even then, it's a really temporary effect.
And what was funny is his first appearance, issue 4, is when his storyline is that he goes back to high school that he dropped out of to demand a diploma.
Mm.
And then Spider-Man beats him with a vacuum cleaner.
did Spider-Man ever fuse him into glass?
They've done that, you know, Human Torch has, for sure.
Has he? Because I couldn't remember if they had ever actually done
that. I follow the career of Sandman so much, but, like, because that was, like, one of those, like, all right, man, they clearly, like, love this guy. Like, you know, like, wrestling, they call it getting a push.
Yeah.
You know, when a wrestler, like, just gets bigger and bigger and stuff. And, what happened with him, so he's, like, he's a Spider-Man villain. And then he joins the Frightful Four. So he's in Fantastic Four for a while. He has that hideous green costume, but then he comes back, and he just seems like but he feels like he's yours because he's never too big.
Yeah.
You know, the second iteration of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, I love those characters, mainly Pyro, Blob, and Avalanche.
Yeah.
They're the Three Stooges of comics to me.
Yeah.
I remember I met with a guy who works at Marvel, and it was just like a friendly dinner we had, but he said, he was like, you know, what would be your dream story to pitch? And I've had this idea for years called the 40-year-old mutant, where it's literally just Pyro and Avalanche trying to get Blah Blade for the first time because he's never had sex.
I like it. That yeah. should happen. Why didn't that at least happen in the Ultimate books, if nothing yeah. else?
You know? And I just want the joke, you know, where he has nothing moves the blob and they show him like up or beaches or something. Oh, and he starts crying.
And he's been moved.
Yeah, how can you not?
And then he becomes a big fan of those type of films. And or that's even, how he meets a girl.
Or even what it could just end with, you know, and him just saying, you know what, guys? I've always said nothing moves the blob, but what you did for me, you know, would be the best. Like the Wrecking Crew, too. Like the Wrecking Crew to me is such a romantic, beautiful thing where here's this guy Dirk Girthwaite, which is the best fucking name, and he gets these fucking powers by accident,
yeah,
you know, from the Norn Queen or as whatever. Yeah, what happens, it was he breaks into a hotel or something. Like I said, the silliness, it's great.
That was the crowbar one,
right? yeah.
Which and one, what's in, his character's name,
the wrecker.
Okay,
so he's a Thor villain. And then a few years later, I think it's in Defenders, he's in prison with these other guys, these three other guys, and they all become buddies. And he's like, I have an idea. What if I share my powers with you? Here's a selfish, evil villain, and he does something so selfless and beautiful. They all hold the crowbar at the same time, like it's a giant dick. And they wait outside for lightning to strike it. So that they can all...
Which share. On paper seems like a terrible plan.
And the thing is that it's like distributed equally. So he has 75% less of the power that he has just so he doesn't have to be alone.
But now he has 75% more friendship.
And that's a great character. The Red Skull's original origin is one of my favorite things. I'm so furious that they didn't have it in the movie.
I was a little surprised by how I felt the Red Skull being such a great villain was kind of very much underwritten.
Oh, and his fight was boring. I mean, that was the thing. I saw Winter Soldier 4 days after The Raid 2, so it was like the bar was too low. You know,
when will there be another movie that is able to approach action movie wise the level of The Raid?
Dude, just hire that guy.
Can you believe they're making an American remake of The Raid? You're like going, guys, bad call. You're bad call.
Yeah, it's called Dread, and they already did it. But
how are you going to do? You're not. You unless you go over there and film it with the same actors.
Yeah, they're athletes. They're amazing.
Yeah.
Do you know what the Red Skull's original origin is?
Not off the top of my head. Okay, I'm sure I knew at one point because I've read all the original Fantastic Four and
yeah. But that it's that he was Hitler's bellhop.
Oh Jesus!
Johann Schmidt. But literally, Hitler is talking with some of the generals or whatever, and he's like, "Nazism is so powerful that I can take anybody and make them into." The ultimate, you know, weapon, and he's like, including this lowly bellhop, and they do that great Kirby thing that I love, where they obscure the face and they only show him from like the side, and he's just like really grotesque looking, and that's it. I don't think you ever see what he looks like,
and for
before
real.
He's the Red Skull, and it's just you bellhop, and he programs him and brainwashes him.
Ultimate Captain America villain on a bet.
And I love that. Like, and it's such the Captain America thing of this one guy who volunteers and this other dude who's dragged by Hitler.
I just see this trading places moment later with you. Here you go, Himmler, $1.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we're getting near an hour, so I think we probably should wrap things up.
All right, man.
It's great sitting here geeking out with you about comic books.
Oh, thanks,
I appreciate
man.
You. It's you know, I could spend all day just talking about like all these beloved characters.
Yeah, but I don't think people could spend all day listening to it. So
some of our fans could.
Nice.
But let's talk real quick. Go back to comedy, which is why ostensibly I was here in the first place.
No, it wasn't.
Tell us about some of the places you're going to be soon so people can come see your great act.
I am going to be at the Comedy Addict in Bloomington, Indiana, May 8th through the 11th, I think, maybe the 10th. When is this there?
I'm sorry? Oh, this will air probably in just a few days.
Okay. Yeah, like, I'm opening for Chris Hardwick May 1st through the 3rd at Caroline's in New York. So you can see me in my hometown. I'll hang out, bitch about Spider-Man 2. I am going to be in Rooster Teeth Feathers in Sunnyvale, California. I want to say the 22nd through the 25th. And I will be on at midnight again, May 19th. And last, I will be at the Florida SuperCon or the Miami SuperCon July 3rd through the 6th. I was there last year. I got to interview Dave Gibbons, which was amazing.
Oh, wow.
Really, really great guy. I had to interview the Green Power Ranger who had a Jesus Didn't Tap tattoo. Also, he wasn't able to.
Yeah, well. and you can get your album Satamantium anywhere.
Yeah, on iTunes at $5.99. Drawing the line at $5.99.
Or I know some people have been telling me lately they refuse to use iTunes. I don't know why, but you can get it on Amazon for $5.99.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. So. I don't know if it's on iTunes for $5.99, but it is on Amazon for $5.99. Yeah. So that would be the way to go.
Yep.
Or if you see me, buy it off me. And
then you probably do better off money. That.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, or you'll just... Give him $30, he'll just perform the whole album for you right there.
Yeah. in a MODOK costume.
See, I think I got $30. Anyway, that's
I am a mechanized organism designed only for killing. With my jokes.